It's Nick Kaufman, here for Calvin Klein. Another word for sexy? Confident. Vulnerable. Me and these Calvins? Calvins are nothing. Find your sexy.
Wrestling fans, and welcome to another edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast. We are the only podcast that brings you back 30 years with vintage audio featuring some of the biggest names of that time. And this episode is each one of them is no exception. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight covered all the news stories and breaking developments that happened in real time. And now we get to relive those moments right here on this podcast. Joining me as always, haven't seen him in a couple weeks, the renowned pro wrestling journalist, former managing editor of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, Mr. Bob Smith from New York, in a nice new location there. For those of you who will be watching this on the video cast, Bob, you're looking great. And I love your little setup there. It looks really cool, man. Good to see you.
Sports, baby, sports. I'll tell you what. I'm happy to be back here, and I'm happy to be anywhere after the month I've had. My little post-COVID adventure was a little bit tough, but hopefully my voice sounds a little better this episode because I heard the last episode, and it was almost like, you know, it was Angelo Mosca or something like that. But now I hope I'm a little more presentable, and we'll put on a good show for it. What do you say, John?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good one today. A lot to cover, of course. I do want to mention right at the top that we really appreciate all the comments that have been coming in about the revamping of the show a little bit, some of the things that we changed, and also the addition of the video podcast. Bob, you got a chance to take a look at it, and I think you enjoyed it like everybody else has. Good stuff there with the video cast. It makes us both TV stars now.
Oh boy, a TV star. Yeah, I only waited like XX years to to be a TV star. No, I will say this though, it adds a new fresh coat of paint on things. I think it's the shows we were talking before we went on this recording. Our show is a little more succinct now. We're trying to tighten it up, trying to make it a little more lively, and we got some surprises coming in the future weeks. So it feels like we're just getting started, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a nice, fresh, as you say, coat of paint. And that's kind of the way you described the show in the very beginning, almost a year ago, that we've been doing this, that we put a fresh coat of paint on what happened in the past, and we put a fresh coat of paint on. I think, you know, it's always good to shake things up a little bit, and the patrons who have commented and the others on the YouTube channel, and if you want to subscribe to that, we're doing a real big push right now to get more and more people on the YouTube channel. It's simply youtube.com. // Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and we've been putting content up there for a long time, so if you're just discovering it, you'll be pleasantly surprised on the amount of history that's up there right now, from some 8mm films to videotapes. You get to see me getting my ass kicked back in 1978, and of course all those clips that Marsh put together several months ago, so they're all up there. Just go up there, just subscribe it, share it with your friends, because we're really doing a big push on the YouTube channel. And each and every week, you're going to get a new episode of this podcast in video form with some great special effects and all the great creative things that Marsh has done, who we'll be bringing on in just a second here. So we're really happy with the direction. Bob, like I said before, you're looking good. I mean, you sound better. And your men's amends, as they say in Italian, but much better than a couple of weeks ago. And I'm glad that you're on the road, because you're going to have a busy time, you know, with the Mets in the playoffs. Hopefully they'll be continuing not just past the wild card, but in the division series, LLCS, and eventually the World Series. You'll be out there. I know you'll be out there cold, but
yes,
excited.
Yes, and there's nothing like a ballpark in October when it's cold in New York. I'll tell you, those winds come whipping through like it's Chicago, you know. And it's tough, but you got to dress like you're going to a football game. But I know we'll have listeners, podcast fans, who will be there too. So hey, let's just it's postseason baseball. There's a lot of excitement, not just with the Mets, but with the expanded rosters and expanded number of teams. Excuse me, that are going to be taking part. It's really exciting. It's been a great year.
Yeah, I actually like the new format with the additional wild card teams and the wild card round not being a one game, you know, do or die situation, but having it at a 2 out of 3. And excited about that. I've been covering all of this also with John Gibbons.
About to bring that up. Yeah.
On the Gibby Show, and you know, the Blue Jays are a lot of momentum right now with that team. And John and I have now done 3 podcasts. It's just called the Gibby Show. You can find it wherever you get your favorite podcast. This past week, this latest episode, we had Jose Bautista on to talk about the bat flip heard around the world and the subsequent fight that took place the following season. And we've had Alex Manoah, who was the ace of the Blue Jays, Josh Donaldson. The day the podcast debuted in September, and for 3 weeks, the show has not left the number one spot of Canadian baseball podcasts. And that's quite a list. Podcasts that have been out for years. So John has not left the number one slot, number one baseball podcast, in the top 5 of all sports podcasts in Canada. And here in the U.S., we're about in the top 50 of U.S. baseball podcasts. It's doing really well. John's getting A-list guests, but the Blue Jays in the playoffs, I think, you know, other than a Subway Series, for me personally, it would be kind of a cool thing to have the Blue Jays against the Mets in the World Series if it ain't the Yankees, because I'd like to see another Subway Series.
But and I'm thinking of John Gibbons now. He must be having some emotions because you've got the Mets and the Blue Jays
right
in the playoffs, two teams he was very closely associated with.
Yeah, he spent the majority of his career, if you add all the years up, with the Mets, between the minor leagues, the little cup of coffees he had in the major leagues in 84, 86, 87. And then he went into the minor league system to manage several of their teams for many years. So, yeah, when you count that up, and then 8 years as a Blue Jays manager in 2 different reigns. And he spent a season or 2 with the Kansas City Royals as a bench coach. And most recently, he was a special assignment scout for the Atlanta Braves since 2019. And he just resigned that position. So he is done with the Braves to concentrate fully on the podcast and get ready for the book release. I got to see the cover today of the book. It's called Gibby, Tales of a Baseball Lifer. Comes out April the 3rd. It looks fabulous. And we're now in the planning stages of the book tour. Book comes out, as I said, April 3rd. But the only thing that could put a monkey wrench into all of it is if he gets called this offseason to go back into the dugout, because there's so many manager openings now.
Right. You know, there's, seems like there's more every day, too.
Yeah, Miami Marlins, Chicago White Sox. Those are 2 that stand out right out of the gate. Kansas City just let their manager go. So there's probably be 5 or 6 openings. And the Texas Rangers is the one that he's like, that would be a dream job for him because that's in his backyard. So we'll see what happens. You know, certainly as much as I love doing the podcast with him, if he gets another chance to get into the dugout and be a skipper for another major league club, I mean, he would welcome that opportunity. And he is an old school dude, man, and he's just so much fun to do a show with, like you are, Bob. But baseball, wrestling, you know, it's all ties in, and I'm enjoying my podcast life right now.
I got to tell you, I listened to John on the podcast, and you, of course, but he seems to be having a blast. And that kind of, you can feel it through the podcast airwaves, as it were. He seems to be having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Which is great to listen to, you know, because like you said, it's a baseball life, and now he gets a chance to look back on all his experiences for the listening public. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, and the guest stars. I mean, that's the thing. When he when he got reunited with Jose Bautista, and they started talking about everything that led up to the bat flip and everything that led up that season, and then the following season when the big fight broke out in May of 2016. It's on YouTube. I mean, Bautista got clocked in the jaw, and John and the manager of the Texas Rangers, Jeff Banister, almost got into a fist fight on the field that day. So that was really intense. It wasn't like your typical baseball brawl, but you know, getting him to bring Bautista on for that reunion, and then Alex Manoah, He didn't even know Alex, but Alex came on the show. And then on the first episode with Josh Donaldson, so polarizing himself, New York Yankee. And Josh has always been somebody to shake the boat up a little bit. And John is getting different guests each and every week. And, you know, I know upcoming Marcus Stroman, who was a former Met and a former Blue Jay, is going to be coming on. He's been in touch with Albert Pujols about coming on.
Wow.
And then in the off season of the Hot Stove League, we're going to bring on some of the 86 Mets as well. So for me, it's a dream because I love baseball so much. And for me, getting the opportunity to speak to these A-list baseball players have been something that I never thought I'd ever have the opportunity to do. And I'm enjoying it very much.
You know, I know this is a wrestling podcast, but I just want to say one thing about Albert Pujols. Nobody is talking about the fact where everybody's pointing at the home runs, the 700 home runs. He passed Babe Ruth for second on the all-time RBIs list.
RBI list.
Babe Ruth.
Yes, he did. What a way to end a career.
Yeah.
What a fabulous career. What a fabulous guy. No one's ever said a bad thing about him. And the fact that the Cardinals brought him back for the last year, that was such a great PR move. And this guy produced, he performed, and he made history. And it was great to see.
And who knows how far they'll go in the playoffs, too. So, like I said, a lot of excitement out there for a bunch of different levels with Aaron Judge, everybody. Everybody's going crazy out there. It's like, you know, who's going to catch the ball? All the drama and all these things that were happening. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the most exciting baseball season for me in quite some time, and the postseason is really going to be an exciting one. So, yeah, I mean, if you're a baseball fan, I mean, you're in heaven right now. If you're not, if you're just a wrestling fan, we will now stop talking about baseball, the game we love, and we'll get into wrestling.
Yeah, we might be offending some Cincinnati Reds or Pittsburgh Pirate fans. You never know, so we don't want to do that.
I'm sorry. It really is. If you're a baseball fan, today is the saddest day of the year because we're taping this on October the 6th, and the baseball season officially ended yesterday. And I was listening to a sports talk show today, and it is kind of the saddest day of the year for the fans whose teams are now done for the season, and you got to wait now till spring training because it's almost like baseball is the only sport that really follows the seasons. Because you know when spring is here, spring is about to arrive, spring training starts, and then you have the summer, the spring and the summer with baseball. And when the fall comes and the baseball season is about to wind down, the days get shorter, it gets colder. And so it's really a true sport that actually is aligned with the seasons better than any other one.
Baseball is such a microcosm of life. You know, the passage of time, the end of an era, and the fact that when the chips look like they're down, like the 2004 Red Sox, things can change on a dime.
Oh, I know. It is a crazy, crazy sport.
That to me is still the most amazing series I've ever watched when the Red Sox beat the Yanks. That was incredible.
Right, right.
From the Dave Roberts stolen base on, it was magic.
Yes, it was. I mean, we could talk all day about it.
We could. Well, we better shut up. Okay.
Yeah, well, I just have one other point about baseball because I know how passionate you are about the Mets, and I am as well, obviously. I was listening, I guess it was Joe Scarborough's show today, the Morning Cup of Joe, whatever they call that show, and they had a long baseball discussion today, and he was like, you know, these teams, even though the players are interchangeable, but the teams – the colors and the team you follow, it's like family to you. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a great analogy because for me, the Mets are like family. You know, I love my family, but the Mets are always like, I live, breathe, die with them. I'm sad or happy. And they're like you, they're like your family. Just the name M-E-T-S for me is like family to me, you know? So,
well, you know, for a lot of baseball fans, it's family that introduces you to baseball. Your dad takes you to your first game, or you go with your brothers, or you go with a bunch of friends when you're still like teenagers.
Yeah.
That never leaves you. It stays with you for the rest of your life. And I think that's one of the reasons that baseball is unlike any other sport. It's kind of like a rite of passage, especially here in the United States. So.
Yeah, very, very true. My uncle took me to my first game in 1966, and then I took my nephew to his first game. And he, you know, it's like it is. It's kind of a traditional. You pass it down. But anyway, let's get back to the wrestling talk. It was a busy week for me. I was out of town last week. I went to the Cauliflower Alley reunion, the CAC, Cauliflower Alley Club reunion. It was the second year that I was asked to and be honored to MC the event. And this year I MC'd it with Medusa. And we also had a special MC named Jimmy Hart to honor Memphis. And I also had the opportunity to meet for the very first time and I'll bring him on now, our producer and creative director, Marsh. Hey, Marsh, hey. How you doing, man?
So I was going through your pictures that you sent me from the event. Awesome. They're great.
Good ones, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's some gray ones in there.
Yeah, really. So I guess for the people who watch this video podcast, you'll be seeing some of them as we talk, or however Marsh is going to do his magic. I do have to first and foremost say it was a pleasure to meet you in Vegas. I didn't get to spend a lot of time with you, and I felt a little guilty about that because, as you know, when you were there seeing everything that I was going through between getting ready to MC and some of the other things that all the business stuff that I was involved with on the other side with the Gibby Show and everything. So I was kind of like not accessible many times. I was just working. But I think you had a good time there. This was your first CAC. So kind of explain to everybody how that experience was for you.
Yeah, it was my first one. And I thought you handled a lot of curveballs in a short period of time, as well as I think anyone could. But yeah, definitely, we didn't get to hang out a ton, but I did get to see you, I felt like at least a good amount of time. It was really great to see you and meet some of your friends, with you. But the event itself, so I've done a ton of meet and greets, probably clearly based off what's behind me, but I will say this definitely had a different feel to it that wasn't quite like a fan fest or a meet and greet. There was some of those aspects to it, but it was a lot more relaxed. And a lot more ceremonial at the end of the days. And I thought that was really cool.
It really was. It was a lot of fun. And you got a chance to hang out, at least during our first lunch meeting. Medusa invited us, invited me to lunch. I, in turn, invited you. And you got a chance to say hello to Medusa. And she's quite the powerhouse, isn't she?
She is. She's everything you expect and hope for when meeting Medusa for the first time. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. I got to see her. I got to meet one of the Power Twins with you. After working on this show specifically and hearing all of the razzing and the knuckle digging that you would expect from them, it was really cool to see the dynamic in person.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is, and it was only David, it wasn't Larry. you know, after all these years, he doesn't change. He just doesn't change. And he's very insulting to everyone, and everything is a joke or an insult. But it was good. It was great to see him. It was great to see a lot of the, and I'm just pulling, you know, excuse me for being distracted. I was just pulling some notes from the CAC as well. So we give you a little taste. It was really, a two-day banquet. The first night, we honored the Memphis territories. And Bob, of course, you're familiar with the Memphis territories. It was a lot of fun. And for that first night, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart was our special guest MC. So that was also a lot of fun. But it was really great. I mean, the main award for that evening went to Jerry the King Lawler. Which was incredible. The stories that he had and the speech that he gave, it really was a fabulous event. Rock and Roll Express was honored there. Teeny Jarrett, a part of the Jarrett family, who was so instrumental in that territory early on, and Jeff Jarrett was there and gave the story on how she actually hired him, and she used to keep a notebook. They used to keep a notebook with the payoffs and what the expenses were and what money that came in, just based on a legal pad. That's how they did their books. It was kind of crazy, you know, all said and done, that first night was really, really a lot of fun. And then the second night, where the big awards were, I don't know, Bob, if you remember Billy Silverman,
referee. Sure. Referee, yeah.
Yeah, he got the Charlie Smith Referee Award, so it was really good to see him after all these years. And Sheldon Goldberg actually inducted him to get that award. There was a Rising Star Award that went to Madison Miles. One of the highlights for me was the Men's Wrestling Award, and that was Kevin Sullivan getting that one. So that was kind of cool with Andrew Anderson, who I actually introduced Andrew to Kevin at the 1992 convention. And they became friends, and they're joined at the hip and have been for many, many years. The Mike Mazurki Award, which is the biggest award of the banquet, went to JBL, to John Bradshaw Layfield. That was kind of cool. He gave a great speech. And then the Lucha Libre Award was probably the most special one for me because it was given to Conan. And it was presented to Conan by another dear friend of mine, Rey Mysterio. So, all in all, there were others that I left out, obviously, just for time's sake. But, Bob, I think you really should make it a point to go next year. It's such a fabulous event. The old-timers that are there, I mean, just in the crowd, Bob Orton Jr. Oh, yeah. Just so many. Bruiser Brody's widow was there, and she, Barbara Goodish, and she's there every single time. And there were just so many performers from back in the day there. And it's open to fans, too, so any mm-hmm. fan can go. They had a memorabilia room, a deal, like a vendor area where, people could buy stuff and get all those meet and greets because everybody was signing, too, which was kind of
right.
cool.
Right.
Yeah, really cool.
It sounds, like an older wrestling fan's dream, to be honest with you, because a lot of those stars were the stars when you and I were growing up, John, and you got to love that. I mean, what's better than that? And Memphis, one of the highlights of my career, I actually appeared on Channel 5 once, which was an awesome thing with Jerry Lawler. And Billy Silverman, I remember when he got a job with WCW, and I saw him backstage. I said, man, I'm proud of you, because he worked himself up from nowhere. He really did. And he became one of the top referees ever, really, when you think about it. So he did a tremendous job with his life and his career, and it's really gratifying to see him get an award for it, too.
Yeah, he was referee for 97 Halloween Havoc, Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero, one of the most legendary matches that people still talk about and replay and watch along even now. He was the referee for that one. It was really cool getting to meet him, meeting Jerry Jarrett. I got to meet David Cantu, 92 years old. Was a wrestler for like 30 years before he became a referee for like 20 years, and then ran a promotion in San Antonio. And he was more than happy to talk my ear off. And that was like, when is that going to happen again? When am I going to be able to sit down and say some words to Jerry Jarrett or meet David Cantu? You know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff is really special.
David was actually honored as well. A surprise. There was a surprise award given to David, for his years in the business. So it really is a great way for the fraternity of people who've been involved with pro wrestling and the fans to kind of just be all together. And it has a great cause. Because this is really, it was started by Mike Mazurki in 1965. Mike was an actor and a wrestler. He started the CAC because there were so many, like there are today from the old days, and of wrestlers that kind of get down and out and they need financial help or they may need some medical assistance. So Mike Mazurki would get together with a group of former wrestlers, insiders at the Elks Club in Hollywood, California. And then, each time they met, more and more people would show up, and then they turned it into an organization. And he was the first president of the CAC. And the tradition is carried on. Past presidents have been Lou Fez and Nick Bockwinkel and others. And B. Brian Blair is the president of the CAC today. So, it really is all about helping wrestlers who need financial assistance. So go to CauliflowerAlleyClub.org and you can become a member for just $25 a year. Lifetime memberships are about $300, and that gets you in for life. And of course, if you go to the CAC, you just got to buy a banquet ticket, really. And then they have raffles and, other ways to raise money there. And it was kind of a really cool event. I was there last year as MC. I had gone to my first CAC in 2019, and I was just honored to be asked last year and this year. And I hope that they bring me back next year, because it was, for me, it was a very enjoyable, it was a very enjoyable 3 days to be around everybody.
It was really cool. And I will say, from my perspective, being able to see John amongst everyone talking the way they were, Conan, as he was accepting a speech, thanked John Arezzi for introducing him even to Medusa and booking him in his first match against Sabu, which he said that he marked out over. I haven't heard Conan say that a whole bunch, but he said he marked out over that one because was the Sheik was the manager for that one. Like,
yes,
it's cool to see John get appreciated.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, because I had, when we, you know, years ago, late 92, Ron Scholar, who was one of my listeners, an entertainment attorney in New York, called me up and was like, I'd like to bring Lucha Libre to the United States, AAA. I didn't even really have an understanding of who AAA was. They were a new promotion out of Mexico. So I was like, well, let me make a few calls and talk to Dave Meltzer, who put me in touch with Conan. And then Conan put me in touch on a conference call with Antonio Pena, who ran in AAA. And then you bring Ron in, and before you know it, and you know, we form a an alliance partnership, and we bring AAA to the United States in August in 1993. And that first show, La Revancha, actually did 17,000 and turned away 8,000. People, and we had the third largest gate in wrestling that year, just under WrestleMania and SummerSlam. So it was huge. It was huge. But yeah, Conan with Sabu, that was kind of a neat thing that took place at the 93 convention. And Sabu was there. He was sitting in the back, and I didn't get a chance to say hello to him. He was there hanging out. Rob Van Dam was in the back as well. And then Sabu reached out and was like, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to talk to you. You know, I was just talking about you because you had me in my very first autograph signing at your convention. I'd never done one before. And my uncle, that was his only ever autograph signing in 93. And that was, of course, the original Sheik. He only did one in his entire life. And I was happy to say that I was able to get him through Kevin Sullivan, who helped negotiate that deal. And to this day, I think I've talked about it before, but it was... I was so not wanting to break kayfabe with the Sheik that I didn't even interact with him at the convention. I made the payoff to his wife, Joyce, and I shook his hand once. I didn't even get a picture with him, and that was a regret. But he was always the one wrestler that I just always felt that suspension of disbelief shouldn't be broken.
I think you handled that right. I do. I think you handled it perfectly. Like I said, I met him once at one of the Goodhart shows when he was going to wrestle Abdullah the Butcher in a cage in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He thought I was Goodhart. The Sheik thought I was going to, because I had Goodhart's same hair and beard at that point, and we both had glasses. About the same size, right, John? He's a little taller than I was, I guess.
A little taller than you. But,
he thought I was Goodhart, and he goes, when do I go on? or something like that. And I went, wait a minute. You think I'm Joel, don't you? So I said, hold tight. I will get Joel for you. And I went and found Joel and brought him back. But he thought I was Joel Goodhart. I don't know what to say. But he just tapped me on the shoulder like he knew me. So we must have really looked a lot like Joel and I. So
I'm glad he didn't get pissed off at you and take the pencil to your forehead.
Start waving the machete around, right? One of the others.
Well, that's what he did at the convention.
I know.
Machete, and people would come up to him. They'd be a little like hesitant. And then he'd slam that machete on the table and scare the shit out of people. I mean, and he started chasing people around with that machete at
the hotel, right?
Hotel, yeah. And there's other businessmen who had no idea a wrestling convention was going on. But yeah, anyway, I mean, it was a lot of fun. CAC was fun. Marsh, you know, it was great to meet you, and I do want to commend you with everything that you've done so far in just a short time that you've taken over the creative direction of the show and the video podcast and. I think we're in for a nice ride here. So thank you again.
Absolutely. I'm really happy and proud to be a part of it. And I want to throw in one last thing. I did get to pull Dave aside from the Power Twin and ask him. He didn't want to do an interview, but I did ask him. He told me he would let me do a little one-on-one and ask him what it meant to him to be on your show when it was first airing in the 90s. And he told me that it meant so much to him and his brother to be able to figure out what their characters would even be like. And he accredited a lot of their success that they had ultimately for as long as they had with getting comfortable with who they would be as characters and how they could even go about it. Like, he took kind of his dynamic with you and moved it forward wherever he went. He tried to find someone that he could kind of like pick on the way that he picked on you, because he knew how well it was working on your show. Like, it meant a lot to them, and he was more than happy to tell me about it. And I was just so excited to hear it, you know, because you hear those old things and sometimes you go like, I don't know, they're hitting a bit stiff. I don't know. Does he mean it? You know, but.
Well, then that means he pissed a lot of people off in his life, and he'd come on the show and his brother would come on the show, and I would genuinely get, as a shoot, pissed off because they were so obnoxious and so insulting. insulting like an organization for the blind that called up at one time. I mean, there were just so many things that were just so horrendous about them, but it was just their natural personalities too. And I'm glad that they felt that way, or David felt that way, and he spoke for his brother. But the Power Twins were, and the people today who listen to the old shows and hear them on the old shows get a kick out of them because they were just so outrageously insulting and cruel to people. And wrestlers like Bialo the Giant that worked in the Independence in Brooklyn, they was a big guy, they'd call him a beached whale. And I mean, and to this day on Facebook, if you go on the Pro Wrestling Spotlight Facebook page, I mean, they're always insulting Sonny Beach, you know, the, you know, big blobs, the big fat. So, and they don't he doesn't even call me John. They haven't called me John since before 1993, because of an incident that took place in the Philippines, which you can read about in my book. I'm not going to elaborate here, but they call me Big Pork Barbecue is the name that they always use. They never call me by my name. They call me Big Pork Barbecue, both of them. So anyway,
Him, and I want to ask you the same question. I asked him if they were always excited to get the call to come on your show. And he always said, yes. He said they were always super, super excited. Yeah. I have a hunch. Were you always excited to make the call or to have them on?
Well, here's the thing. And he kind of, I don't think he was a rib. Maybe he has memory loss or revisionist history. They would call, or I would occasionally, but they would just show up. That's the other thing. Okay. They would just all of a sudden, the doorbell of the radio station would ring, and there they are. And what are you going to do? It's like, all right, come on. What are you going to do? Because I was intimidated by them back then when I first met them.
Huge, huge guys. God almighty. Huge.
And they were bodybuilders, and they were bodyguards, and they were, you know, I would like, oh, shit, here they are, you know, and it was kind of the dynamic of the relationship. But then after I got accustomed or used to them, when they did come on, and there were some times where I did say, come on, guys, come on. You haven't been on in a while. It was always the same thing. It was always fun. It was always insulting. And when you listen back now, you laugh your asses off.
Yes, you do.
You laugh your asses off. But anyway, I digress. We do have to cover November 14th, 1992, because there was wrestling that we talked about 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll leave you guys to it.
Thank you, Marsh. Thanks. I appreciate it very much. And before we get into the meat of it, Patreon, everybody on the Patreon, we want to thank everybody again. Our membership is still very, very stable at 80 to 85. I wish we could get up to 100 or more. $5 a month gets you in the door. You're going to get this podcast 5 days early for $5 a month. Membership along now 5 days in advance. You get the video podcast as well. Other items that are available there between the vintage audio, the vintage video, 8mm films, depending on the tier you're in. I won't get into it much. Just go there, check it out. Patreon.com/John Arezzi. $5 a month is your opening entree. And I think you'll really enjoy the Patreon. And we're going to schedule, Bob, another Zoom call with our patrons this month. So we'll have some fun with that, because I do want to get everybody's kind of feedback that joins this thing on where they think the show is going and some of the changes that were made.
Yeah, I really enjoy the Patreon days when we get to talk face-to-face, voice-to-voice with some people who really enjoy the show. And we learn from them. You know, we learn kind of what direction they like, the things they don't like. It's a lot of fun, and they're great people. I really enjoy it. I really do.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about getting one scheduled. As long as it's not a night the Mets are in the playoffs, maybe we'll do one of those off nights. So we'll look at the calendar and see. So anyway, Bob, podcast show 49, covering show 179, right. November 14th, 1992. Let's get into it.
Yeah, at the opening, we have a interview coming up later in this show, some clips from Hawk of the Road Warriors. And he was about to appear at, what was it called? Sportsplex? I laughed because you mentioned it probably 25 times on the show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little overkill. But yeah, Hawk was in town for the big sports appearance at that venue, which I won't mention because I said it so many times on the show.
Yeah, we've established that now.
Yes,
also, there was some news going on with veteran superstars. Two of the most controversial ones of that era. You talked about the last TV appearance of the Ultimate Warrior in WWF again, because he had already had a snafu not that long before this, and he was about to disappear. As was Jake Roberts, the Snake, who no-showed some stuff and was out of WCW almost as fast as he got into it.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's when my association with Jake started. And that was 2 years of nightmarish dealings with the Snake himself. But the Warrior, yeah, I mean, that was the last TV appearance. I'm trying to recall, did he ever go back, or was that it? Was that finally it with him and the WWF?
As you know, I was on the verge of leaving PWI at the time. Yeah. I don't recall him going back. I thought that was the rekindling, and then that was it. I think WWF kind of said, enough, this is too much trouble, as I recall.
Yeah, I think you're correct. I think you're correct, because I do remember bringing him on the show in January, February of 93. So this show was covering November. So yeah, mm-hmm. It was definitely his last time. And then we bring him on for an interview to talk about why he left the WWF. And that'll be coming up several weeks from now.
Right. And as everybody knows, the constant on the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, or the other name of the show, John, what were we calling it at this point? It
was Pro Wrestling This Week. Yes,
which,
right.
Which hung on for a few months. Don Leibel and his news capsule, which we now redub the Time Capsule, because we go back 30 years to look at what happened. During a really busy period in pro wrestling, it was hot and cold. And at this point, it was kind of cold. You know, business wasn't good. There was confusion in WCW, as there always was. WWF was kind of jangly and disorganized. So it was a period in flux. But Don was able to kind of encapsulate, you know, oh, good word.
I like that word,
Bob. Yes, encapsulate what was going on in not only in those federations, but in the little ones too. So you want to hear what Don had to say about history at that point?
I certainly do.
Let's go to Don Leibel's Time Capsule.
Hey, it's Shigo for Calvin Klein in my Calvins. That's all. Calvins or nothing. Find your sexy.
But without further ado, we're going to get into our news capsule and bring on Don Leibel, who's with us each and every week, has been with us since 1989, and is here again. Donnie, how are you?
Pretty good, and hopefully many more years to go.
Yes.
Hey, lots happening this week. Of course, Hawk being a big name in the island this weekend for his appearance, but he had a match this past week teaming up with Sasaki in Minnesota, and certainly one and a half of the Legion of Doom keeping busy. But other things certainly taking center stage right now, as the revolving door to employment and unemployment in the ranks of professional wrestling were working overtime this week. Last Tuesday, the Ultimate Warrior and Davey Boy Smith exited the World Wrestling Federation. Now, reports have it that both were seeking higher salary demands. Both wrestlers are featured on tonight's taped Saturday night main events to air on the Fox Television Network, and a taping was scheduled for this past Wednesday in Stamford, Connecticut, according to The Torch. And look for Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, to drop his managing bid in favor of returning to the ring as early as this coming week. Hennig, who has not been wrestling, apparently has had his Lloyd's of London insurance policy, which has been paying him while away from competing, bought out. Over in World Championship Wrestling, don't expect to see Jake the Snake Roberts on any future cards. Roberts had reportedly checked into a drug rehabilitation center. WCW Vice President Cowboy Bill Watts is expected to make an announcement on TV this evening explaining Roberts' departure from the company. It is believed that on November 4th is when Jake sought treatment. And Jerry the King Lawler once again is the United States Wrestling Association Unified Champion. Lawler won the strap he had previously held by defeating Todd Champion in Memphis, Tennessee. Jeff Jarrett served as the special guest referee in this challenge. And this past Monday, in a rematch in Memphis, Harvey Whippleman was imported as the surprise referee. And as a reminder to all wrestling fans, particularly to those loyal followers of the Legion of Doom, tomorrow, Hawk will be appearing at Sportsplex in Belmore between 11 a.m. through 2 p.m. There will be dealer tables, autographs, photos, and copies of the Weekend of Champions convention video will be available. And finally, if the scrapbooks could talk, they'd be telling us that it was in 1975, 17 years ago this week, at the Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles, it was Kim Duck scoring the win over Gordon Nelson in a match that saw Mr. Wrestling 2 referee. And in Madison Square Garden, Ernie the Big Cat Ladd scored the pinfall on Haystack Calhoun. For Pro Wrestling This Week, I'm Don Leibel reporting. Capsule time, 10:09.
There's no bigger fan of Jerry Lawler than me. I consider him a friend, but I will say this. At that point, he was still running around calling himself the Unified Champion, even though the AWA had stripped him of the belt a long time before that, you know. And it's a situation where, you know, he kind of merged the AWA belt in his mind with the USWA belt, even though there was an AWA still running and they had another champion by that point. And so the whole Unified thing, he kept going with that, even though it was long past its due date, you know.
Well, with Jerry, I mean, he's always been an endless self-promoter, so that was just kind of a way for him to call himself a Unified Champion, and it certainly was an interesting scenario back then, Bob. I mean, but the King, as a self-promoter, and some of the amazing things he's done, he's just a very historic character, and it was really kind of cool to interact with him at CAC. It was kind of the first time I had the opportunity to do that, and it was fun just because of the knowledge and the things that this guy has done in his career.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that had me a little bit surprised in that news clip was Haystacks Calhoun did a job.
Yeah.
He didn't do a lot of jobs.
I mean, it had to be a count out or, you know, something like that. And I don't think he got pinned. He was one of those guys that wouldn't get pinned. I really don't recall ever seeing Haystacks pinned.
Get a feeling it was one of those count out deals where jabbed him with the throat
with the tape thumb that Ernie was responsible for. I mean, just a little white tape around the thumb, and he'd be like just lurking around the ring, always holding that thumb up, and then he'd jam it in the throat. I was like,
he used to do the bit where he would load it.
Yeah.
You could see he was loading something into the thumb while the referee was, you know, checking out the wound on the opponent or whatever. Yeah.
He was a massive guy.
Ernie Ladd was great. Great on the stick. Just as entertaining as any wrestler ever. Whether he was a face or a heel, he was fabulous. He was great.
And you know, he never called the announcer, like Vince McMahon. he would just call him Mr. TV Announcer.
That's right.
That's the only thing he would say to the announcer. Mr. TV Announcer. That's all he would say.
First time I ever saw Ernie Ladd was watching the Pedro Martinez Federation.
IWA.
Yes. No, the earlier one, the NWF in Buffalo. And they used to promote in Albany, near where I used to live as a kid. And they were having a match in Troy, New York, which is near Albany. And Ernie Ladd comes on and talks to Ron Martinez and goes, "I don't particularly like coming to Hogtown." And and Martinez says, "Wait a minute. That's Troy. That's Troy, New York. That's what I said, Mr. TV Announcer, Hogtown." And I'm like, oh, my God.
What great promos. Yeah, I mean, Ernie was just a legend, and he had some great feuds and battles in his career, and he was just one of those dynamic performers, former football player who, when he came into a territory, he was pushed right to the top, to the main event program, and he was always somebody that I really enjoyed watching because he was a consummate heel.
You know what? He was the Andre in a way because it kept him fresh to go from place to place to place to place. He was never in one place for long.
Yeah.
But he was always a top star while he was there.
Yeah. Because he was a big guy. Was 6'9" or 6'10". Oh, God. Yeah. He was huge. Huge.
Oh, those massive leg drops. My God. It was fabulous to watch. Just great.
Yes, he was.
So after your chat with Don there, you guys took on a bunch of topics, including we'll bring up Medusa again because she was going to wrestle Paulie dangerously.
Yes, there was an angle that took place, and she got into a little feud with Paulie, and I don't know if she was if he was sent home or if that match took place. Like I said, it was 30 years ago, so
right.
I'm not really that sure about that, but I know that Paulie was sent home around the same time by Bill Watts. So I don't know if we covered that or have covered it here yet.
Not sure. I'm not sure at all. Also in the conversation, WCW, Eric Watts took on a new star, the Mambo Warrior. Was it like the Kanazi style of Mambo or the Weehawken style of Mambo? This is what
I know one of our listeners or viewers on the video podcast will know who that Mambo Warrior was, but I cannot to my life right now remember who it was. And even remember that angle at all.
I don't know anything about that. I just saw the name and said, what in the world? And you also made a point of telling the listeners of the radio show at that time that tapes for the Weekend of Champions convention were about to come out.
Yes.
And including from Referee Productions and I guess a Q&A with Nikolai Volkoff or something. You could explain what happened at that point?
Yeah, I mean, the Weekend of Champions 1992, we had Stephen DeAngelis the guy who became ECW ring announcer and Broadway producer to this day. I saw Stephen in December, but yes, he did the production of the Weekend of Champions, and everything about that weekend, from the reunion with Bruno and Zbyszko to the auction to the Q&A where Nikolai Volkoff showed up and got everybody up on their feet because someone said, sing the Russian national anthem. And everybody stood up and they all sang it with him. And there's a video of that. That video of that is pretty classic. And we're going to, for patrons, by the way, if you're in the $10 a month level, that video, that complete video is up there for your enjoyment, patreon.com/John Arezzi. So you'll be able to see that. But that was a really warm and fuzzy way to end that Q&A that year, because we had Bruno on the panel and Captain Lou on the panel and Volkoff. It was just kind of like a really neat question and answer session with a lot of the legends that were at that convention. And Nikolai stole the show.
Well, I think that's you bring up a really interesting point about the production of the conventions, in that it wasn't just a bunch of guys slapping around, and it was really organized, you know. And you had people that working behind the scenes, like you just mentioned, to keep it that way and have the flow go really, really smooth. And I think that's why the fans had such a good time, because it was one thing after another and things never got boring for a second.
No. It was between the autograph sessions and the dealer tables and the Q&As and just the hobnobbing and mingling with all the stars there. And then the video was so special to me because Steven interviewed. I mean, one of the best interviews that he did was with Killer Kowalski, that, you know, Killer just went on a promo for, you know, 5 or so minutes talking about him being a vegetarian and not taking steroids, and you know, people should, eat this type of food or that type of food in pure Killer Kowalski lingo. And then the other interviews with the Captain Lou Albano, and he reunited with Wendy Richter at that convention, and Handsome Jimmy Valiant, and It was just hot stuff. Eddie Gilbert, Kevin Sullivan was there. Nancy was there. It was just an amazing. And then you know, your old compadre, Bill Apter, was a big part of the beginning because that's when I brought Zbyszko to have their reunion with Bruno. And Apter was there, you know, as Bill always did famously, bringing the guys together. Let's take this shot. Let's take this shot. You know how Bill kind of orchestrated that type of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But it was fun, and that video, it brings back great memories, and it is available if you're a patron, and you'll be able to see the entire thing in its entirety, and it was just a lot of fun. I mean, it was, shit, 30 years ago, man.
Yeah. Long time. You said this is why this era is kind of cool, because back then, you had tapes of the event, and people had to go buy the VHS, right?
Yes, it was a VHS only. There were no DVDs even back then.
There were no DVDs, but now people can look at these things on Patreon, and it's a better deal. You know, it's just easier. You can click a button, and you can go back in time that way. But back then, you had to go to maybe L&S Comics, right?
Yeah, I did have some distribution points, and it was made available to Booster Club members at the time for me, and I sold it via mail order as well. And it was a classic 2-hour tape of covering everything that convention offered.
Awesome. That's really great. So as we go back,
real quick, jump in. Mambo Warrior was Kamala in his WCW run for a short period of time.
Are you kidding?
No, that's what they had him as. He looked identical, still the same exact face paint, same chest paint, and everything. It just was his WCW run.
Okay, now I'll bring this up because it confuses me, because they changed his name, but he was Kamala in WCW later when they brought Hogan in. Yes. So usually when they change a person's name, it's because of a legal, we own that name, like the WWF would say, we own the name. But he was Kamala everywhere.
So, I think Don Liable in this speculated they called him that because he was losing, that they may not want people to remember.
They brought him into job?
Yeah, he lost that match. And secondly, Medusa versus Paulie, it was the stipulation was Paul had to have his hand tied behind his back.
Right.
And John speculates it's because it was his return, and they may have told Medusa to straighten him out so he flies right. So.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Medusa could straighten me out anytime.
Oh, really?
All right, I'm sorry. I had to. I'm sorry.
She's a shooter, man.
I know. I told you the story before we went on here. She belted me once as a ringside photographer. She was running in to interfere in a match, and she just saw me and hit me in the stomach. I know she knew who she was because I talked to her many times before that, but she just gave me a nice bounce right in the gut as she went by, and I went, oh, hello to you too.
Yeah.
So it was a memorable moment.
That was her way of saying hi.
Hi, Bob. Bang. Well, you know something? There's other things that you and Don talked about on the show. This is an interesting one. I said Bobby Eaton and Arn Anderson, who were a tag team at that point in WCW, I guess Don brought up they were in talks with the WWF about possibly going there, which I don't believe happened at all.
No.
And it said you believed that they would go to Smoky Mountain. I will say this. Arn did. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember if Bobby did as a solo. I just don't recall. I have a feeling he ended up there, you know, Cornette and everything.
Well, Cornette, they were joined at the hip. They were kind of brothers, Cornette and Bobby, you know. So it wouldn't surprise me.
Cornette ran a great angle where Arn shows up unannounced and the Rock and Roll Express brought them in as a mysterious stranger, and they pulled the bag off his head and it's Arn Anderson. And of course, everybody goes, you know, he wasn't a face at all. But here's the Rock and Roll Express bringing in Arn Anderson, and it was a great angle. Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm sure that popped the crowd big time.
That's Jim Cornette for you. Soup to nuts, man. He could get a pop. He knew how to raise expectations.
Yes, genius. Genius.
Yes, an absolute genius. Speaking of geniuses, you were a genius in your day, my friend, because you got you had a way of getting professional wrestlers to open up during an era where they didn't really say a whole lot. And we have a clip here, as we talked about, with Hawk from the Legion of Doom or the Road Warriors, whichever you prefer. And it's his, you know, it's his first, I guess, actually, his second interview at this point since leaving the WWF, and I think you got them both.
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, and this was around the time when I brought him in for this autograph signing at that place that I mentioned 25 times. I will mention one more, Sportsplex. So he called he called to promote that appearance, and he was. Here's an interesting side note. He initially was going to come to the studio and do the interview there, but he went out with his good buddy George Napolitano in Brooklyn the night before, and they went out partying, and so he didn't make it into the studio. But we did get him on the phone to promote it and talk about some other things.
Interesting. It's an interesting period for him and the Road Warriors and the business in general, because, you know, it wasn't the same. You know, it just, as good as Animal and Hawk were separately, they tried, but
yeah,
they needed each other, man. They just did. They were it.
Yeah. They right? were good. Yeah, they were like, it was, you know, it was very difficult to see either of them in singles matches or with different partners. It just didn't feel right.
Exactly. It didn't have that. It didn't have the same vibe. They were so phenomenal upon their formation, and then joining Paul Ellering, who really did manage them. It was magic. They were so ferocious. Just watch some tapes of the Road Warriors in Japan anytime. My God, they were just absolutely hellacious is the best word I can come up with.
Yeah. One of the best of all time.
Absolutely. Easily top five, you know, and then you have to debate who the other four are, really, you know, because they set a different kind of a standard for tag teams. You know, that brutality, the total yeah. action all the time.
Yeah.
They didn't wrestle long matches, but you never forgot what you saw, I'll tell you that.
Nope. They did what they needed to do, and it was to be believable and also give you that suspension of disbelief, because they were just so dominating in what they did.
I bet somebody like Jim Cornette has the answer to this, but I have to think that they may have been, for at least an eight-month period around 90, the top box office attraction in wrestling. I really think that's true. I could be wrong, but I think when they were really starting to get hot, leaving Georgia and going into bigger, you know, federations, I think people were buying tickets just to see them. I'm telling you right now.
Mm-hmm. No argument here, my friend.
Yeah. So why don't we listen to Hawk, and he's explaining what's going on at the Sportsplex, and also what's going on with him at this period of time. So let's listen to the dulcet tones of Road Warrior Hawk.
Okay, we are back with Pro Wrestling This Week, and let me bring on a special guest. The man will be appearing tomorrow over at Sportsplex right here in Long Island from 11 to 2, and I'm referring to the one and only Hawk, formerly of the Legion of Doom, the originator of the Road Warriors. Hawk, you with us?
Of course I'm with you.
Sorry to wake you up. I know you probably were out last night enjoying New York City.
I was out trolling in Brooklyn.
Did you have a good time?
I had a wonderful time.
Well, we're happy to have you here in the Big Apple, and we're looking forward to this appearance tomorrow. Now, is this your first autograph session since leaving WWF?
Yes, it is.
And all the fans out in Long Island looking forward to meeting you. Now, we spoke to you at an interview several weeks ago, and at that time you had just left the WWF, and I guess you're going to be heading over to Japan to do some action over there.
I'm going to be in Japan the 23rd of November. I have a new tag team partner, whose name I will not disclose at this time.
Okay.
And I'm going to go over there and rampage with this man, and I'm going to make all the Japanese wrestlers very sore and very sorry.
Well, that should be exciting. Of course, you were a big, big star over in Japan, having not been there for a while, I would guess. And fans of the Orient are going to be looking forward to Hawk appearing in that area. But here in the New York area, you had recently, just a couple of days ago, you appeared at a big benefit up in Buffalo, New York, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I was in Rochester.
Rochester.
Yes, I was. I mean, Ken Kaiser has an annual benefit for St. Joseph's Children's Home, which I was up there with many great baseball players like Frank Viola, and Robin Ventura, Rafael Palomero, many more.
So getting out there doing the banquet scene, and before you head over to Japan, and of course tomorrow, don't forget everybody, 11 to 2, Hawk appearing right here in Long Island at the indoor batting range and sports facility Sportsplex. And Hawk, you'll be there and enjoying the fans. Do you enjoy this type of event, coming out and meeting and greeting the fans?
Yeah, I do. I like to get. I like to keep in touch with all the people, you know. And I can tell you what I do. I find it very easy to entertain them.
Yeah.
Because see, they like twisted individuals. Let's face it, everybody does. And I give them that, and that's just the way I am. I'm a entertaining individual who enjoys the people to come out and be entertained.
Well, you're certainly one of the individuals in pro wrestling that not only the hardcore fans look up to because of your style in the ring, but also the little kids look up to as well because they look at you as a superhero to them. And so you're appealing to all the fans, and there's going to be a big turnout tomorrow. And we just wanted to touch base with you to see if you got in New York safe and sound, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you tomorrow at Sportsplex.
I'm looking forward to it also.
Okay, Hawk, listen, we'll talk to you later and arrange your travel arrangements for tomorrow.
All right.
Take care now.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, Hawk can go back to sleep now. I definitely woke him up.
Did you woke him up? And it was kind of funny. You told me the person to ask for, and I thought that might have been his manager. So I'm saying, well, is Hawk there? And he's, yeah! But we definitely woke him up. But either way.
I cannot imagine if he visited a children's hospital in full wrestling regalia, how he wouldn't scare the bejesus out of those kids. He was a fearsome-looking guy.
Yeah, especially if they weren't wrestling fans.
Yeah, they didn't know who he was. Who's this giant coming after me? Mommy. You know, seriously. With the face paint and whatnot, and spiked leather armbands.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that he didn't dress up in full gimmick, but I'm sure the face paint was there.
He couldn't have done that. And the play probably told the kids who was coming too. And he was probably great with the kids.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm just imagining him walking in on a, you know, watching the wheelchairs flying down the hallway.
Yeah. You know, one thing about that autograph appearance that he did, and he was so great with the kids there at Sportsplex. And, you know, he'd pose for them. He'd put kids on his lap. He'd lift them up if they wanted to be lifted up. And he really was having a wonderful time interacting with the fans at that event. And I'll never forget it. Just the joy on the kids' faces and how happy he was. Because obviously he was out of that crazy schedule that he was in. Obviously there were some problems which led to that departure. But he really made every single person who lined up to get his autograph feel very special. And I'll never forget it on the look on some of those kids' faces. And even the guy I do the Matt Memories podcast with, Tim Poutre, who was helping me out 30 years ago. And he has Hawk to body press him. And Hawk said yes. So there's a picture of Tim being just lifted way up in the air by Hawk. And it was just a lot of fun. It was a great appearance, and everybody had a good time. And those are the things that I enjoyed back then, was to be able to facilitate these types of events where fans got to interact with some of the heroes that they never really had the opportunity to do before.
But it's a book you couldn't judge by its cover, right? I mean, of all people, him almost being like a Santa Claus for those kids, that's awesome. I mean, that's great. When these guys... Wrestlers, especially heel wrestlers, had a hard time of it throughout wrestling history because they had to be guarded. You know, they would get stabbed on the way to ringside, or a hat pin Mary would come and poke in the ass with a hat pin. You know, people hated heels. They wanted to see them get hurt. But for somebody like him, who also was a heel or a face, depending on what was going on, to be able to go and do an event like you put on, and really let his guard down and have a wonderful time with little kids, it just sounds great. And you make it sound like it was a great event as well.
Oh, it was one of my favorite smaller autograph appearances. It went over really, really well, and had a lot of fun, Bob.
That's great. Yeah, got to remember the good stuff, like I always tell you, John. You know, I know putting on the show originally was a lot of headaches and stress, but you got to remember the good stuff.
Yeah, the good stuff does come out, and those are the memories you cherish most. I mean, not all the chaos and all the other stuff that was going on. The Russo stuff was still going on back then. It was just, there was a lot of stress. There was a lot of anxiety. There was a lot of BS. But when things were good, that's what you appreciated.
You know, there's one thing I learned about life after 30 years. There's always BS. One business to another, no matter where you go or what you do, you're going to run into a big stinking pile of BS.
Yep.
So
that's the nature of individuals.
That's absolutely true. America, America. All right. Anyway, let's have a little fun now. It's ad time.
Yay.
Yeah. one of the things we're changing about the show is John had some really whack ads, some really interesting ads, advertising, which was supposed to be the bread and butter of how he made his living. And this one, can you explain this one, John? This, you're going to have to tell me a little bit about the background of this one.
Well, the L&S spot?
Yeah.
Which one are you referring to?
He's been bringing Galoob?
Galoob. Galoob was a brand for dolls, for action figures.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So it wasn't as wacky as you might have thought, Bob. It
was I'll tell you what. I remember MJM. I think was a company that did wrestling dolls, if I'm not mistaken.
LJN.
LJN. That's right.
MJM. And then Hasbro got into it, and
right.
Galoob had those other figures. Galoob figures were not as nice as the Hasbro's or even the LJN's back then.
Did you collect figures?
Not really. No, I did not. I wish I did because of the value of them today. I mean, they're just off the chart. I mean, I had cases of these dolls for the conventions that I ran, and I wish I would have kept the cases, or I wish they wouldn't have sold the way they sold, because some of these Hasbro dolls now in the package are going for thousands of dollars for an individual doll, like the LJNs are. I mean, it's a tremendous market for this stuff today. And no, I didn't. I did have had Lucy's, as they call them. You know, I decorate my shelves with some of them, but I didn't have any packaged up because believe me, if I had those today, I'd be sitting pretty.
I had exactly two wrestling dolls at the office at PWI, and I left them there when I left. I didn't even look back. I had the King Harley Race, and I had Abdullah the Butcher.
Some of your favorites, right?
Favorites from that era. And the Abdullah the Butcher doll, I don't know if that was a Hasbro. I think it might have been the AWA collection. Mm-hmm. Actually, it came in a two-pack with Carlos Colon.
Yeah, hold on one second, because I say action figures. I do have a few. So, Bob, I'm going to get them right now off my shelf, and I'll show you what I have.
I'll juggle while we wait for you to come back. Fans,
there you go.
I'll throw you with what I did in Barnum & Bailey back in 1972. No, John's going to come right back with some action figures.
This one here is a classic one, Freddie Blassie.
Freddie Blassie.
This is a limited edition WWF Legends of classy Freddie Blassie, if you can see from there. And I do have a just because of my friendship with the guy, I have this Three Faces of Foley.
Here. Oh my gosh, it's Dude Love, it's Mankind, and Cactus Jack in a triple threat set.
That is correct. And one more. This is kind of a classic superstar set of Hulk Hogan and Blassie.
Oh yeah. Boy, that Blassie is really good. In fact, they're both good. That's some really good work on that and that set. They really look like them there. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to sorry, we're diverse here. And you can see all of this on our video podcast. The WWE was selling this one not too long ago, and it's a bronze figure of Bruno Sammartino. And so I had to get this one from my shelf, and then there was another one with Nature Boy Ric Flair. So that's kind of all I got. But the most unusual one is I have this Tony Schiavone bobblehead. So
Wait, hold the phone. That looks like recent Tony Schiavone. Where did you get that?
It was a giveaway. I got it from a guy in Virginia who had sold me a bunch of vintage wrestling magazines. So it's from Cool Ray, Tony Schiavone and his dog Bug. So I have that. And that's really kind of all. I don't really collect a lot of stuff anymore.
There's got to be a collector for that last one. As esoteric as that is, there's got to be a collector for that one.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. If you want to see all of these, just go to the YouTube channel and yes. You'll be able to see it.
It's an array of toys, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Hey, you know what? We got a clip to play. Why don't we play
Let's play the L&S comic clip.
Here at the program, I guess he's going to give us his special for tomorrow's show. It'd be Larry from L&S joining us direct from L&S land. Larry, are you there?
Yes, Leah. How you doing, John?
Okay.
All right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, we definitely we'll definitely be there. 11 o'clock till 2. We'll have a good time hanging out with Hawk. We're going to bring some videotapes. But the nice thing is we are going to be doing a special with the videotapes. We're going to be taking orders. As a matter of fact, I had plenty of catalogs made. So everybody who comes, if they want the free catalogs, will be available there. And we will be taking orders for Christmas delivery tape, Christmas and Hanukkah deliveries. Can't forget Hanukkah. Anybody who orders at the show, tapes will be guaranteed delivery in time for the holidays. Wow. Because I've been getting a lot of people calling, and we have a lot of orders in the pipeline for the holidays this year. The other thing of major importance is, if everybody doesn't know, next Wednesday, Superman does die. Superman Bites the Big One this Wednesday. Part 7, which is issue 75 of Superman, does come out on Wednesday. So if people are interested, come on in Wednesday afternoon or anytime after Wednesday afternoon, and they'll be able to pick it up without a problem. We'll have plenty of copies available.
So you do have an ample supply of this big comic book that's coming out Wednesday.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one.
Now you have the only Superman memorial on Long Island, don't you?
That's true. We are right now. We're featuring in our windows, and we've been calling all the news stations, and a lot of them are starting to pick up on it. A lot of the radio stations and the television stations are starting to pick up on it. Right now, in our window, we have the only monument to the death of Superman on all of Long Island. I can't say all of New York, because who knows what anybody in New York City did, but right now we are featuring probably the only testimonial monument to the Man of Steel in our windows. We've got a collage featuring his life story, as well as a gravestone, which is actually life-size to Superman's measurements, in our windows. And a lot of the news stations have been picking up. We're going to keep it in our windows until Superman does come back. We're not taking this lying down. Superman, we figure, will be coming back to life at some point, because alien physiology says that there's got to be a way to bring him back. But we will keep that up until he is brought back to life.
Well, that's certainly it's gonna make me sleep a little better tonight, knowing that Superman will eventually come back. But will the Ultimate Warrior come back? That is the big question that we're trying to answer today, Larry.
No, we figure this time, hopefully, he's buried permanently.
Could be.
Never been a big fan of his. Some strange reason, he just never thrilled me. Mm-hmm. Now, Ric Flair, on the other hand, I think is more seems like a cat. He seems to have a zillion lives.
Well, there was the L&S Comics promo.
Yeah, good old Larry. Larry and Steve at L&S Comics. Larry Spitz, who was one of the really innovators of the wrestling figure era for wrestling. And our listeners had the opportunity to always find out what was the hottest dolls coming out, or action figures as they're known. And he was on top of it. And that's what I really revered about him. He was a collector himself, and he ran a store that did very well. So anyway, Larry from L&S Comics, and he was always on top of it, and I'd bring him on occasionally to talk about what he got coming out. But before we start talking about what we're going to talk about next, I had one other item, Bob, which I don't think you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna hold it up now. Around the time the Dark Side of the Ring TV show did the episode about Herb Abrams,
mm-hmm.
and Cactus Jack was on that, or Mick Foley was on that, I was on that show, or Sunny Beach was on that show. Herb Abrams at one time was coming out with cookies.
Oh, don't tell me.
For the UWF. Cookies. He was, had cookies for Brian Blair and some of the others. And he even said that he was going to come up with a Herbie cookie, but the Herbie cookie never came out. And I think there were bags. I don't even know if these cookies ever were manufactured anyway. So Mick Foley, because he got such a kick out of that Herbie Herb Abrams saying he was going to have his own cookie, that Mick, we did a special with Mick after The Dark Side of the Ring to talk about it, and Mick made cookies up, and he made up a Herbie cookie, and I'm holding it up now, and you can see it on the YouTube channel, Herbie cookies, and you can see the UWF, you can see a facsimile of Herb Abrams. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is the back of this. It says, not to eat. And well, look at the bottom. Not to eat. Cocaine.
Cocaine not included.
So there's only like, I think there's only four or five of these that were ever made, and I'm happy to have one of them here.
For those listening, for those listening at home who can't see the cookie, it's a very realistic. He's dressed in apparently a yellow sport coat with the traditional Herb Abrams chest hair sticking out, protruding from the
and the cowboy boots with UWF cowboy boots with
UWF logos on them. Fans, it's about as realistic as Herb Abrams ever was.
There you go. The Herbie cookie, limited edition.
That's made by Cactus Jack.
Yes, he called up a friend of his who made these cookies. I guess it's Marty, and it was Mary or something. UPG. I don't know what it is, but very simple made. But I mean, it's one of these things that I just can't seem to like. I keep it up there on my bookshelf because I just laugh every time I see it.
It was a period for all of us back then, I'll tell you that.
Yes, indeed.
You guys continue to talk a little bit about things. And here's an anecdote from our last show. I guess our last show, the guest was Dennis Carlozza, right?
Yes.
And he called his federation the WWA, and he was going to have a match with Terry Funk and Eddie Gilbert. And it shocks me to read the note that you weren't able to draw up enough interest to go see that.
No, I didn't get enough people to even charter a minibus, and that match did take place, and I understand it was a fabulous match. We're going to talk about it. Actually, we cover it on the next show. Mm-hmm. And if anybody, by the way, who wants to hear this entire show, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/John Arizzi, and the entire show, unedited, with all the commercials and with all this back and forth, you'll be able to hear it in its entirety, and patrons get that every Sunday. You get the entire show. And you get to review the podcast early. So a lot of people listen to the entire show first and then listen to the podcast to hear us review it. So that's kind of a cool way to follow it week after week.
I'm still shocked that you couldn't get a bus to go to that particular match because there were so many Eddie Gilbert fans from his matches with Cactus Jack, and Terry Funk was rare around here on the East Coast. So yeah, I'm really surprised that it didn't get more.
I was only charging like $30 or $35 for the round trip bus fare and ringside ticket to the show. I mean, that's all it was. But here's the other reason why, Bob, is that I'm on WNYG now. There's like, you can hear it around the corner and not too, in some towns, but the listenership probably dropped by 90% from the time I left, maybe more. From EVD back to WNYG. So it was kind of like, it was almost like I was broadcasting back at the college station when I was on WNYG because it had such a limited audience.
Oh, that's too bad. Oh, man. You did more bus trips after that, right? This point in time.
I don't know if I did. I mean, I'll find out like everybody else does when I upload these new shows to see if there were any more. I know the last big one I did was the Halloween Havoc show for WCW, and that's right. When we had the dueling buses with Russo's bus and my bus. And so after we leave EVD and go to NYG, I mean, there wasn't enough demand because there wasn't enough listeners. I mean, so anyone who heard the show back then, consider yourself lucky. And consider yourself lucky today that I saved all the archives and you can still relive it like it happened yesterday.
But there's the thing. I am a veteran of two of your bus trips and massive. There was just so many people there and everybody was enthusiastic and the buses were full. I guess, like you say, if you didn't have the reach with your wattage, you couldn't get the ears to listen and buy tickets.
Right.
That's too bad. Oh, man. That must have been a great match.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, we'll cover it because I did upload that new show for Marsh yesterday. And when I was listening to it, we were talking about that match and what a bloodbath it was. And anyway, we'll cover it on the next show.
Great. And now we'll get into the what we call the bread and butter of every John Arizzi radio show, the callers. Always made time for the callers, no matter who the guests were or what was going on. There was always at least one segment with your local callers. And we're going to start out with Jason from Northport, who missed the first part of the show. And he's going to ask the most repeated question in the history of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight era. Let's listen to that question right now.
We'll go to the phones now and see if we can answer a question or two. Hello.
Hi, John. It's Jason from Northport.
Hey, Jason.
I missed some of the capsule. What's going on with the Warrior?
Ultimate Warrior is gone from the WWF.
Finally, huh?
Finally gone, as is Davey Boy Smith.
Oh, so what's going to happen with Survivor Series now?
Well, that is a big question mark. The WWF is scheduled to have a special TV taping to shoot a couple new angles and explain why these guys are now gone.
Okay, and I also was always wondering, what does Jack Tunney actually do since Vince McMahon really makes the decisions?
Jack just gets paid for being like a figurehead president of the WWF. He was one of the promoters up in Canada for many, many years. So they rewarded him with this position.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Thanks a lot, John.
Okay.
In our program notes here, and you'll have to hear this on Patreon, John says he will not miss the Warrior and was never a fan.
No, I was not a fan of the Ultimate Warrior. I never really was. And but, you know, a little bit hypocritical. I did try to do business with him after he left the WWF and brought him on the show. And I actually had booked him to be in my main event of my overseas tour to Southeast Asia. He was supposed to be working as the IWAS, International Wrestling All-Stars Champion. And you can read all about this in the book. I wrote about it pretty extensively. But I actually told him to go F himself, screaming at him. I wasn't a fan. He held me up and he kept demanding more and more money after he had agreed to a certain amount, $25,000 for a 2-week tour, which I thought was pretty good, a lot more than anybody else was getting. Then he insisted on $50,000. And because advertising was already out in Southeast Asia from the promoters we sold the tour to, I gave him the other commitment of $50,000, which would have eaten into my profit. And then finally, I was in my attorney Ron Scholar's office with Jake the Snake Roberts and DDP Diamond Dallas Page in the waiting area, waiting to meet us next as we were signing contracts for the tour. And then Warrior and I are on the phone. It's a speaker phone with Ron Scholar, and he goes, John, I really can't do it. I need $100,000. I need $100,000 to do it. And I was like, how could you say that? You agreed to 25, and then you wanted 50, and I agreed to 50. Now you're telling me $100,000? I can't do it. Well, I'm not going then. I said, well, go blank yourself. And I hung up on him. And that was the last time I ever spoke to him. But the problem then was that in the other room, Jake and DDP were there, and DDP I brought onto the tour as a favor for Jake. He said he needed a babysitter and he wouldn't get in trouble if he had DDP with him. And anyway, Jake bust in because I had promised Jake, I think it was $15,000 for the 2 weeks. And he busted in. He goes, you're going to pay that son of a bitch $50,000. And then he refused to go on the tour unless I bumped him up to 25. And, you know, DDP only gave like $4,002, and I wasn't going to, you know, take it or leave it type of deal because DDP was not even really well known at that point.
Right.
So that was my interaction with the Ultimate Warrior. So didn't like him as a wrestler and didn't like him even more when I tried to do some business with him.
Nothing like getting held up at the last minute, is there?
Yeah.
I'll tell
you. Read about it in Matt Memories, My Wild Life, and Pro Wrestling, Country Music, and With the Mets, available at Amazon.com.
well said. What a read. All right. Well, we got one more caller clip.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I know what's coming.
Folks, have you ever been outside having a nice time? It's a picnic or a ball game or a nice, beautiful outdoor event. And there's this annoying fly that keeps buzzing around your head, and you keep swatting at it, and you can't catch it, and it keeps coming at you. John, you must have felt like you constantly had an annoying fly around your head during this period, because Well, the fans just wouldn't give up on something, would they?
No, they would not.
So let's hear what the dumbass fans had in mind right now.
Take another call, 661-1440. Hi, you're on Pro Wrestling This Week.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say Vince Russo rules. You're a loser.
Well, you're an idiot.
Ah, loser.
Idiot. People with low
I cut him off. He went to say a bad word, you know.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, but you know what's the nice thing about it? We have the telephone number here, and we furnished that to the police. So
well, that's very good.
It's a federal offense now.
Yeah, why don't you do a, what do you call it, Star 69 or something like that? Or
that's a good idea. Let's call him back.
Call him back and bug him. Yeah, some people have are mental midgets out there. So if you're a mental midget and would like to participate in the program, we will take time for you, but people will hear you to be the loser that you are.
Indeed. Indeed.
Indeed. Yes, he had his followers. He was broadcasting up the block from me at WGBB, only less than a mile away, and I'd still get those calls from his fanatical following.
That was your Baba Booey.
That's my Baba Booey?
You know how people would call other radio shows and go Baba Booey and hang up.
Right. Yeah, that was
kind of WFAN like, and stuff like that. So yeah, now that was your Baba Booey.
Yeah, that was kind of like my Baba Booey, yeah, because Baba Booey is still to this day the producer of the Howard Stern Show. And yeah, there's always a Baba Booey on national newscasts. People love to say it. But in my case, there would be that occasional you're a loser, Russo rules type of thing. So that was part of the era.
Boy, it must have been so aggravating. And, you know, and you were a younger man then, and Vince was younger, and tempers flare. And I'm glad the cooler heads prevailed during
that. I was much more volatile back then. You know, I always try to keep my composure on the air, but I was more volatile, and I get upset easier. You know, today you could say what the F you want about me. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. I mean, because it's like I don't engage. And I don't really engage with anyone who's wanting to start some shit with me. I just won't do it. You know, I just turn the page on them and that's it, because I don't need the aggravation.
It says more about them than it does about you, that's for sure. Well, anyway, I guess that's it for our clips this week.
That's it.
We're going to give you a little bit of a preview for next week's show. How's that sound, John?
Yeah, we have something really special, and I'm going to put the entire interview up for patrons this week. Davey Boy Smith was so instrumental in the legacy that he led and the WWF and that historic match that he did with Bret the Hitman Hart, that SummerSlam. And after he left the WWF, I got a hold of him and did an interview with him, which was pretty extensive. We'll feature it in like a two-parter, you know, from 30 years ago, two-parter from 30 years ago. But I wanted to give the patrons the entire interview before we start airing it in a few weeks here. But it's Davey Boy Smith, and I was able to get him to do an appearance also with Jim the Anvil Neidhart at a bowling alley on Long Island. So this was just kind of a little snippet of part of that interview, which we will be featuring on future episodes here.
Well, it certainly did, and the fans were so enthusiastic. It was great to watch that particular show, and there was also a chance you'd been out with an injury, a knee injury, that almost forced you to miss that show.
I actually missed the show, but, you know, quit wrestling altogether.
Yeah.
I had a knee injury up in the Massachusetts area in Portland, Maine, and I banged my knee and I got staph infection. It's called staphylococcus. It's the worst staph infection you can get. It eats starts eating your joint away, then your muscle away, and it was the most painful thing I'd ever gone through. And it was like right into 6 weeks, but right before SummerSlam, you know. And I came home and just had to go and see a specialist every day with my knee and have it drained and needles shoved in it and painkillers. And then I had to get in shape for SummerSlam, you know. I had to walk in the ring of SummerSlam in shape, which I did. I came through with my end of the deal, and I was there, you know. Well, I don't think I was actually 100% for the match, but
it was a great match nonetheless.
Gave it 100% anyway.
Everybody here in the States, you know, the newsletters who rate these things, they all gave it 4 stars, and it was a lot of people felt it was be a short match because of the injury, and it was an emotional match. It had everything to it. It had everything to it.
And 83,000 people on top of that. You know, you just can't beat that. You know, it's one of the best shows. I think it's the best show Vince has ever done in the World Wrestling Federation. You know, I think it beats all the WrestleManias and all the SummerSlams. I that's my feeling about it. You know, you got the electricity of the crowd, 83,000 people, you know, outdoors on a beautiful day in England. You know, you couldn't beat it, you know.
You also had a family issue involved in that main event as well.
Yeah, family. I had my wife at my throat every day.
Yeah, well, that was, it just added to the match, and it added to the conclusion of the match, and it really gave everybody goosebumps who got an opportunity to see it. Was that your biggest thrill as far as that particular match?
It was my biggest thrill ever in the wrestling business so far.
Wow.
I don't think it'll ever be topped. I don't think you can top Wembley Stadium, you know, 83,000 roaring English fans. That's pretty hard to top, you know.
Yes, indeed.
John, that match, and I don't think I'm being using hyperbole here, I think was one of the most important matches in professional wrestling history, and I'll tell you why. Wrestling fans had to sit through the Mambo Warrior and Duke the Dumpster Drosy and Terry Taylor as a chicken.
And Rocco
during this period. But here comes SummerSlam, and you've got a national hero wrestler in England taking on Bret Hart. The whole thing was real serious. It looked like a sporting event. It had a flavor unlike anything else that WCW or WWF were presenting at that time. And I think it was the precursor to a better period in wrestling. First was Ric Flair showing up in WWF, then this match. And I think the WWF realized they didn't have to do greasy kid stuff anymore. What they wanted was better matches, more compelling storylines, serious wrestling. And it was a classic match. I urge anybody who's never seen it, go on Peacock and watch SummerSlam from 1992. Tremendous. John, what do you think?
Yeah, the whole thing, the storyline, the family drama that was associated with it, the work rate, the believability.
Yeah.
You know, it was like suspension of disbelief at its finest with that match. And it was kind of ironic that he had left not too far after that. And we'll get all the reasons for that in the episodes that we're going to be reviewing. It was a great match in the history of pro wrestling, like you stated, and it showed everybody that, you know, you can do realistic wrestling matches with great storylines and people will eat it up. You didn't need the cartoon BS that was shoved down everybody's throat week after week. And great point, Bob, and certainly what a thrill it was to talk to Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, and another one that was gone way too soon.
And here he is telling you, after such a great performance, that he wasn't 100%.
Yeah.
He was all banged up, and he, to put on a match like that with, you know, Bret Hart, come on, you know, the excellence of execution, as they say. They made music in the ring, man. They made classical music in the ring.
Yep. And as Bob said, watch it on Peacock. It's out there for everybody to see. And that it's a great way to end the show today, Bob. I want to bring Marshall back on. Marshall.
Yep.
It's a good one. And I know you're going to be adding your little magic touch to the post-production of this and make it visually appealing for all of our new YouTube watchers of this show each and every week. Some of the things that you've done, I mean, you've really done an incredible job. So from your perspective, this show that you're going to go into post-production and get the video version and edit the audio version, any comments from you about what we just covered?
I look forward to putting the little visual something to associate with, because, you know, I feel like the biggest question we had going into how do we make it a video format is, well, when we're playing back tapes, what's that going to look like? And that's kind of the most fun I get to have with it is, like, how do we keep it all engaging and give references. I like the idea of like, let's go find the Death of Superman comic. Let's go find pictures from Bulldog struggling in the match. You know what I mean? Like giving perspective to it that can help draw people back in. Maybe there'll be some Galoob pictures up. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw you taking a lot of notes during the taping. So we can't wait to see and get the final edited copy of it. Yeah, we're taking you behind the curtain a little bit, but this is the process that we're doing, and we're just so excited about having you involved with us and all the creative stuff that you're doing, and we look forward to it week after week, because we got some really amazing shows coming up.
Yeah, I look forward to some of the feedback, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Please give feedback on our Patreon page if you're a patron, patreon.com/JohnArezzi, or on the YouTube channel itself. I mean, you could comment on all the videos there, and the first episode is up, and people are enjoying it. It's getting the views now, but comment, let us know what you think. And also, before we close it out today, I want to make sure that everybody knows how to find you guys on social media. So, Marsh, why don't you go first, and then we'll turn it over to Bob, and then we'll wrap it up.
You can find me on Twitter at Ref Marsh. You can go to WrestlingOnTheRocks.com and find all the fun stuff I do outside of here as well.
And I'm writing down your handle. I'm sorry. I want to make sure that I follow you on Twitter, where I am Bob_Bahumba, Bahomba. It means nothing. It's just gibberish. It was the name of my first record label. And I'm usually there kvetching about something, and I welcome all comments, good, bad, or indifferent. And you can also find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Spotify and Amazon as Robert Charles, the blues singer. If you want to hear some free music, it's all there. You don't have to buy nothing. All my stuff is streaming now, so enjoy.
There you go. Well, guys, thank you so much. I appreciate it each and every week to be here with you. And if you want to find me, it's very easy. Twitter at John Arezzi, Instagram at John Arezzi as well. Podcast-wise, we just taped another episode of Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, which will be released on October the 16th in conjunction with that 50-year anniversary of the show that took place October 16th, 1972 at Madison Square Garden that I attended. That main event, Bruno Sammartino and Pedro Morales teaming up against Professor Toru Tanaka and Mr. Fuji, the revenge match from the showdown at Shea, which took place September 30th at the Garden that ended in that 75-minute draw. We have a bonus episode up right now that covers the showdown at Shea. So look for Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden. That's also available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. That show is co-hosted by Tim Poutre, written and researched by Richie Garcia. And also you could find me each and every week on another podcast, and that's The Gibby Show. That's the baseball podcast with the former manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Gibby himself, Mr. John Gibbons. Don't forget, once again, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is up. It's out there. It's been up for a while, but now we're finally getting some traction on it. So please tell your friends about it. And it would be a personal favor to me if you subscribe to that, because the more subscribers, then we can begin to monetize that channel. And maybe, you know, once in a while, we can make some money, which we have not been ever able to do on this podcast.
Subtle, John, subtle.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, if they like the content, you know, the 80 something patrons that we have out of the, you know, thousands of people that have listened and downloaded the podcast. And there's 80 of them that are these real hardcore believers of what we do and what I do. And those are always appreciated here, especially the executive producers, Joe Holloway and Anthony Pyrus. Of course, all the patrons that help with supporting this show. John Arezzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast is a production of Matt Memories, LLC. Our co-host is Bob Smith. Our producer and creative director is our friend Marsh. Until next week, when we have a show that we're reviewing with Captain Lou Albano and his reunion with Mickey B from WNYG. My name is John Arezzi, and we will see you all next week. Have a good one, everybody.